Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. There's a big one at the London Stadium this weekend. Ooh, Mourinho might be back at the Bridge.
And England bloody beat Spain. Away we go. Easy.
Drop the iPad.
As you heard from me on Monday, I knew they were going to beat him. I knew it.
Cheeky draw, Donaldson. Nearly was a cheeky draw.
The cheekiest of all the draws.
Did you think at halftime you think that draw's on?
We'll take that. You know, we talk about our WhatsApp chat quite a bit on the Monday show. And we're always sort of a bit of back and forward talking about the game that's on.
A little bit of laughter.
Very rarely does it all go completely silent because no one knows what to say. And that happened when the third went in. Yeah. I noticed it.
After that, it was mostly just swearing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It seems like a long time ago now, but my word, I'm still excited about it.
Did you see us? Did you fucking see us?
Marcus was on CNN talking about that performance. I've never seen a more happy...
Do you know what
a man full of the judges, such humour.
I was like a dog with two dicks.
Can I tell you what
Donald
me
Trump
of?
Getting the nomination. It was just a dog with two dicks.
Could I see that erase you? It reminded me, Marcus speaking on CNN about England beating Spain, reminded me of those adverts you get when people win the postcode lottery.
Yeah.
And they're presented with a big check.
Jeff Brazy around your house.
I just can't believe it. It's going to change my life.
It's fake news. Fake news. Okay, we scored three goals. The greatest three goals. Oh, my goodness.
Is that Donald Trump?
I think so.
Yeah.
Via Kenneth Williams.
After a tooth extraction.
Matron. Oh, matron. Okay. You can say that, you know, we only had... What was it, 27% of the possession?
Effective.
Oi. Mm. But we had 60% of the goals, didn't we?
Can you just tell everyone what you've referred to England's team as in the running order this week?
Southgate soldiers.
Yeah.
They've taken a huge step towards survival in League A Group 4.
They have. That was a six-pointer.
We're not going down.
Peter Jackson's going to do a film about this.
Yeah.
Imagine if we relegate Croatia.
Yeah. It's World Cup revenge. Yeah, they go down with Germany.
Oh,
could
God.
Be.
We are through the looking glass.
I mean, all joking aside, but no, let's keep the jokes. It was one of the most blistering first half performances for England.
I'll tell you a joke. Yellow card for Eric Dyer. That was a joke.
Jordan Pickford got away with it as well, didn't
he? Should have been an OBE, that.
I was like, Jordan, I know you like to get the rave on, but bloody Nora.
Yeah.
Start after the game.
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
To be fair, it was very much like he asked was it Rodrigo Moreno? Yeah. Very much like he asked him to dance.
He did.
So it did sort of ring true with...
Grab your partner by the waist.
Yeah.
And hope you get away with it.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. But, I mean...
A brilliant performance by England, though. One thing that can't go unsaid, I know it was a while back now, we will come on to talk about Premier League shortly, but it was such a young team as well by England.
Was it the youngest team since the 50s?
I think so, yeah.
Average age.
And for them to soak up the pressure in the way they did and to be confident enough to let Spain have the ball and then hit them in a way that really does suit England. And actually, in a way that they didn't really play like in the World Cup.
Absolutely.
I don't know if they didn't have the confidence then, or Southgate feels like they've moved a bit further on their development and now they can do that.
Well, actually, perhaps as well, that they didn't feel they needed to.
Well, they got knocked out.
In terms of how they prepared, I think that they maybe felt they could go toe to toe with Croatia.
I think maybe watching the World Cup performances, certainly at the back, and how they were quite defensively organised, and you know, obviously there were some emerging defensive characters, notably the big guy. I think in this situation, watching that team, they were so mobile. And like, yeah. they were kind of like interchanging. They were it really was something else. And I just think the confidence that the World Cup gave them, they just thought, we can go forward, we can swarm, we can you know, we can switch flanks quite quickly and stuff. Oh, man, it was brilliant.
You said that you'd never seen an England side swarm like that before.
Yeah, they didn't know what to do. The Spanish were like, oh, my flipping God.
Yeah, and England can swarm.
Yeah.
And if you can swarm, you should always swarm.
I think... We made the point when Gareth Southgate took over and made this point of, you know, blooding a lot of younger players and ushering a new generation through, that they are unencumbered by the baggage of previous England generations, particularly the whole golden generation tag. Mm-hmm. And none of those players are associated with that time when England were turgid, really, and a bit painful to watch and sort of full of, lacking any invention. And you saw yesterday, I mean, imagine... In the past, even expecting an England team to stand up to Spain like that and to be confident enough to go, all right, we're not as good as you. We're going to hit you on the break. We'll have a few forays forward, but otherwise we're going to try and soak it up. We've executed our game plan perfectly. It's England. Well, you don't see England doing that. They've been so limited in the past.
Were you not a bit worried that they conceded two goals, though? I know the second one came very, very late on, but...
The second half performance... To be honest with you, with some respects, this is not like for like, ladies and gentlemen. So please stay away from jumping down my
throat. Judge him badly.
In a few senses, it reminded me a little bit at times, with some little comparisons, of Liverpool versus Manchester City in the Champions League in the quarter final last season, the first leg at Anfield. Now, England didn't fly out the traps like Liverpool did and blow Manchester City away. But in the sense of they gave him a few good digs, which was enough to win the game ultimately. Yeah. And then Liverpool, obviously in the second half, defended really well and were airtight. England were not airtight. I think, bearing in mind, England are developing and they're playing a better team, it wasn't too bad. Spain didn't create too much. But I think that England's second half performance, yes, there was a few sloppy passes. Yeah. There was a complete lack of going forward at all. I mean, England never threatened the goal, to my memory, in that second half. And so England, if they can make that kind of second half, if they can sit on a lead a bit better... They sat on the lead. They did okay.
They made 3-0 look very dangerous for a
lot of teams. But remember, don't forget, it's England. Mm. So it's not that Klopp Liverpool side sitting on a 3-0. So it is England. So England are not going to suddenly become, you know, Italy in the sort of early 90s or whatever. Just shut up shop and that'll do.
Well, the big test for them, Marcus, on that note, was when Paco Alcacer scored.
Yeah.
35 minutes to go, really, realistically. In fact, a bit more, because there was quite a lot of injury time in the end. As soon as that goal went in, you thought, okay, now this is the test.
Yes.
Because if they score again in the next 10 minutes, then there's no way England win the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, they were able to shut up shop and ride their luck a little bit.
Well, Jordan Pickford, but that's a mistake, so it's not... if you will...
We didn't concede from that anyway.
No, yeah. It's
just fine.
Jürgen
Klopp told me it can never happen again. So he's pleased to go out of the way. But I wanted to reserve special praise for the midfield, who, for me... in what was really a quite experimental midfield three. Mm. England haven't played that formation very often. The personnel they had in there, in Winks, who was
second cap.
Yeah, inexperienced. Barkley, who's coming back for the first time for a long time. And Dyer, who I've personally criticised at the very top level, saying I'm not sure he's got enough quality. They frustrated Thiago. They swarmed all over Busquets.
Yep.
Sal couldn't really have an effect on the game and ended up being substituted off. So... They played to their strengths, they moved the ball quickly, and they were incisive when they needed to be. And that scoreline, actually, 3-2, I know it sounds weird because Spain had like 25 shots or whatever, but it does flatter Spain because they scored in the 98th minute.
Yeah.
And when we look back on this in the years to come without seeing the detail, we think, oh, we snuck that one.
Yeah,
but actually, we were devastating when we had to be. Mm-hmm. And we only had five shots, but three of those went in. And more importantly as well, Rashford and Sterling both got goals, which is really, really important.
And also as well, I mean, while we're dishing out the praise to England, the fact that they controlled the midfield so well, or not necessarily controlled it, but certainly, you know... imposed themselves in it. And the fact that England was so ruthless is a sign of confidence, isn't it? You can only finish with a sort of clinical ruthlessness if you are a confident team. And even with Barkley coming in, as you say, not having played that much for England, or not having played for England for a long time,
Joe Gomez,
absolutely. The spirit in that camp is clearly one that is full of belief. And, you know, it started to feel like there was a danger of a sort of like sliding back into same old England after the Croatia result. But they've stood up and gone, no. This is not going anywhere. We're going to keep this feeling alive.
Yeah, and I understand Spain may have been missing sort of one or two that might start. But even Chilwell, it's not long. He wasn't at the World Cup. No. You know, you start looking at the names and you think, I'll tell you something, you know, Rashford hasn't started that many. I mean, okay, maybe that's a bit fanciful because Rashford's there, but he's still a young guy. Mm. But that Sterling first goal, the move from England.
But then the ball from Rashford, and also Pickford deserves some credit from that. The playing out from the back thing is clearly working, because I know it was a fairly long ball, but it was with real, real purpose.
Yeah, what about, I mean, that Sterling finish, but it was Michael Owen-esque against Argentina, but what I loved the way England played in that first half is England have pace. Mm. And we mentioned it, obviously, in a tongue-in-cheek manner when we were talking about Usain Bolt on the last show, playing for his Aussie side. I think he's turned down a contract.
A man who's famously not a football player.
He's turned down a contract with Valletta, I think, in Malta, you know, so there we are.
I think Jordi Cruyff might have played there at one point.
He might well have done. I think you might be right there. But if you've got pace, you know, we were joking around, you know, you play a high line, you know, Bolt would get in behind. But if you play a high line, because Spain did go into that game very confidently, because England haven't beaten them for ages previously to that game. And they've 38 games unbeaten at home in competitive matches, Spain and
just
so on.
Thrashed Croatia as well.
Exactly. But Spain like to play a high line. They like to squeeze the pitch, of course, because that's, you know, what they do. And that's good. England knew that was going to happen. And I've always thought that if England can hit teams properly on the break, it's fine. You know, 27% possession, whatever England had. But if you take your chances, like you were saying, Luke, that's the way England should play against a better side, to acknowledge these are better than us. Because sometimes in previous years, I don't know what's been going on with England managers. They sort of go, I think we can maybe go toe-to-toe. Right. And you think, no, you have to have more about you. And with Holland and Southgate, they've come up with a plan there.
England are 10-1 to win the UEFA Nations League now with Bet365. £10 returned, £110 including stake.
Let's not go that far.
I don't know.
I mean, Marcus, I'm going to direct this at you. Yeah. Can England win this group?
Of course they can, mate.
Yeah.
Of course they can.
No, but you haven't got a big win under your belt. Southgate's never beaten the big side. Bloody has now.
Yeah. Bloody has now. Right then, let's move on to the Premier League.
Stop flexing.
Yeah. West Ham are at home to Tottenham Hotspur. We're not going to move on completely from England, because will we see any big challenges from Eric Dier during this derby?
I'd hope so.
He's got one under his belt now.
He said he put one or a marker down on Sergio Ramos against Spain. And Pochettino said he was proud of it and very, very proud of his players, Winks, Kane, Trippier and Dier as well. I mean, I love that. The fact that Dier puts that one in, you said he was, you know, bewildered that he got a yellow card. And what does his manager say? Yeah, that's my boy.
Yeah, forgetting who his manager is.
That's very true. Yeah. You can sometimes forget that about Pochettino, because Spurs playing a certain way. But yeah, he was a bit of a naughty boy.
It's interesting how that rule, or that law in the game now, which says that whether you play the ball or not is irrelevant. The player doesn't seem to have filtered down to the players, because the first thing they always say is, I've got the ball, I played the ball.
Yeah,
and the referee probably gets a little bit bored by saying, well, that doesn't matter.
Yes.
If it's excessive force, I'm within my rights to show you a yellow card or even a red card.
Yeah, Maguire had one as well.
Yeah, but this game against West Ham will be a fiercely contested one, no question. West Ham have been okay, haven't they? But Spurs have probably gone under the radar a little bit.
They have. They're a bit like Arsenal, actually. The two North London sides, I think Arsenal as well as Spurs, are only 2 points off the top. Spurs have won their last three. West Ham's sort of mini resurgence, if you will, was halted by Brighton last time out.
Yeah.
But Marko Arnautovic among the goals during international duty, as he tends
but
to be.
If you take into account that you've got this whole sort of narrative around Spurs where not too long ago Pochettino was sort of saying, now we need to show intent. We now need to go and build on this we've built. And then they end up not signing anyone. And then Pochettino says, oh, well, you're brave not to sign anyone. He sort of spun that.
Yeah.
But really, they've had their joint best start to a Premier League season ever, and their best season start ever in terms of wins. Mm-hmm. And they've been absolutely decimated by injuries as well. I mean, when I was at the Barcelona game, they had to start with Winks and Wanyama in midfield. Mm-hmm. If you look at the players that have been out and are probably out for this game, it's Ali, Eriksen, Dembele and Vertonghen.
Yeah.
Very, very important players. Like almost the entirety of their spine, with the exception of Kane. They've been without Lloris as well. They're probably going to be they possibly could be without Rose this weekend as well. And at one point, they were without their two first-choice goalkeepers, yet they've had such a good start. Mm. So going to West Ham won't be easy, because I saw the West Ham-Brighton game. West Ham, perhaps a touch unlucky. I know Brighton had a goal disallowed quite late on, but West Ham are okay.
Yeah.
It'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting game as well, because West Ham really raised their game against Spurs.
They do.
Quite surprising, but Spurs and Southampton joint are the team that West Ham have beaten most in the Premier League. You wouldn't think, would you? Because it's sort of
do you remember that robbery under Allardyce where they beat them 3-0, I think, at White Hart Lane? And every time
Morrison?
Yeah, Morrison scored a goal late on. And every time they attacked, West Ham went up the other end.
Yeah,
and they managed to score three.
It's funny when you're talking about the statistics there, Luke, because when you look at the table and think, oh, right, yeah, Spurs are only 2 points off the top. You think of the great start Liverpool have had and Man City obviously up there as well. They're only 2 points off. I think of Spurs, oh, yeah, they lost to Watford and then one or two, you know, others that they might have done better with. But you're right, despite the injuries, they are having an impressive start to the season. Mm. And for me, it has gone under the radar as well. You would fancy Spurs in this one, but the old Lions aren't going to, you know, lie down,
roll
and get
over.
Their bellies tickled.
The draw here is 11 to 4 with Bet365. £10 returns £37.50 if we see a stalemate. So, yeah, last season, Spurs won at West Ham and there was a draw. I think it was a draw at home in the league. And then West Ham beat them in the League Cup, of course.
That's right, yeah.
There we go.
There we are. All right, let's have some emails with PTD.
Yeah, the one time I actually remembered that we had emails coming up almost immediately, Marcus, today, an off-air point at me.
Yeah.
So
I'm done doing it now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing it as well. So,
got a jingle?
There's no reason for me to... Well, I'm reading off the iPad.
Oh, actually, for God... So he starts off with a boast. But he hasn't got a jingle.
To be fair, you basically recreated the jingle there.
No, that's the WhatsApp jingle.
There we go.
Not the beers!
You've got mail.
There we go.
It's
a jingle
for
all the ages.
Was that not a temporary jingle, you were saying?
Do you want one of them?
No, I don't. We just want to give him a bit more work.
I think Donaldson's on-air belligerence is by far the most severe of any football podcaster ever.
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, of course it is.
I have more responsibilities than that. Heavy is the hat.
You're worse than Glenn Denning, who I'm led to believe is quite a belligerent chap on air on Football Weekly.
Led to believe.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on swiftly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Liam Fernandez. Hello, Liam.
Hello, Liam.
Dear Ramblers, following Gibraltar's recent triumphs, I thought I'd tell you about my encounter with one of their star players. His name is Andrew Hernandez. I'm not sure if you want to read his name out. We can do, I guess.
Just have.
I collect international kits with the eventual aim of owning one from each FIFA nation. Few people do this, but I read an article about a guy who completed it, and because some countries don't actually sell the national shirt, you have to actually track down the players and ask them to send shirts.
The island of Montserrat, aren't they 205th in FIFA or something? So they're not going to be selling them on Sports Direct, are they?
Well, yeah, but for football hipsters, I mean, completionists or completists.
Yeah, there's not that many of those out there, are there?
There's money to be made with streetwear.
Well, do it yourself then. Set up your own little business, making hooky Montserrat kits. Like when we were in Glasgow that time, and you put together a range of Celtic shirts stitched together.
Mm-hmm. That could have sold.
That took you all day. It looked terrible at the end of it. You couldn't sell it.
What I love about that is Pete's walking down the road. Someone's about to run up and punch to him. He quickly swivels round. Yeah. Oh, best mates all of a sudden.
Yeah.
My memory of that was us preparing for the live show, going through the running order, doing all our preparations. You just sat in the corner with a needle and thread.
It's very therapeutic.
To be fair,
it's what I do on air anyway.
You say like us going through our live, you know, running order is like some sort of meticulous task. Oh, we're talking about that. Yeah, good.
I'll tell you why I mentioned it, Marcus, because Pete on stage famously forgot his bit, didn't he? And he had to run off and go and find
it. I had a couple of drinks.
I'm not letting sleeping dogs lie.
That's worse.
That's annoyed me for the last 2 years, and I had to get sleeper train on my own as well.
I don't think you heard him. You said you didn't.
No. You did not have to do that.
No.
You opted to do that because you thought Pete would be doing it as well, and you thought it would be funny. And then that's on you.
And then he stitched me up and got the megabus.
The megabus, which had a little hammock that I slept in, which was brilliant.
Uh-huh. Anyway,
more of that.
It was only called the bus until Pete got on it.
Yeah.
Desperately wanting a Liechtenstein shirt, I went to the team sheets for their match against Gibraltar and found one of their players on Instagram. I messaged him saying it would be amazing if you could send me a Liechtenstein shirt. I'll give money to a charity of your choice to say thank you, etc. I immediately realised that I hadn't actually messaged a Liechtenstein player. I had messaged a Gibraltar.
Oh, okay.
Gibraltarian. Gibraltar shirts are surprisingly easy to obtain, so as not to seem like I didn't know what I was doing, I quickly followed up my message, apologising for making the mistake, and saying I actually already had a Gibraltar shirt. Just wasting this man's time, which is what I'm enjoying about this one. So I panic bought a Gibraltar shirt to back up my lie.
British awkwardness.
I thought that would be the end of it, but the Gibraltar international Andrew was actually really lovely enough to get back to me and wish me luck getting the shirt. A week later, they beat Armenia, and I've been plugging up the courage and messaging my congratulations. We now follow each other on Instagram. I've been watching his success with pride. What a lovely fella, and what a spell they're having.
Oh. Love struck a Romeo.
Yeah, they've won two on the bells.
Yeah, two in a row.
I've got a little Gibraltar update. A friend of mine, Ewan Flynn, he wrote a book called We Are Sunday League about his team, Sunday League team in London. And the season. It's a really good book. It's interesting. But their centre-back for that season was none other than Roy Cipollina.
Cipollina! Oh, wow.
Who scored the other night for Gibraltar.
He did.
And he's got several caps now. Those Cipollinas who play at the back, centre-back, not related.
Ah, wow.
They're both just called Cipollina.
But he, Cipollinas.
But he went from Sunday League with Ewan's team straight to playing for Gibraltar.
Has he played against...
Roy Cipollina, he scored for them.
Oh, okay. The
he, scored for, he scored. I think he outscored the winner in their last win.
My goodness.
Yeah, against whoever it was.
Liechtenstein, I think.
Armenia or whatever it was.
They beat Liechtenstein.
Yeah, Liechtenstein, I think it was. He scored the winner again. Yeah, anyway, so that guy literally was a Sunday League player and now he plays international football.
Magical.
There you go.
Andy Gray, not that one. I was listening to Monday's show and the mention of Daley Thompson playing football reminded me of when he signed for my local town side, Stamford AFC, in 1995.
Ah.
The Daniels, superbly named after Daniel Lambert, the world's fattest man, were managed by Ramble. They were managed by Ramble favourite in massive inverted commas you could probably see from space, I'd say, Steve Evans, now boss at nearby Peterborough United. Unsurprisingly, even at 37, Thompson was still ridiculously fast and strong, bagging a couple of goals and an assist or two on his debut at home to SNL Corby. His appearance pretty much trebled the crowd at Stamford's old Woolthorpe Road ground. I seem to remember him getting hit with a reducer from behind in a later appearance, only to jump up and pull out the immortal, "Do you know who I am?" The defender glibly replying, "Yeah, that's why I did it."
That's always the great answer. That's always the best response. Though.
Apparently, a couple of mates who played for Stamford at the time said Thompson ingratiated himself to the side, or with the side, by bringing a huge bag of free Adidas swag with him to training.
Yeah, textbook.
Yeah.
Textbook stuff.
Thank you, Andy Gray, not that one. If you want to get to the show, short@thefootballramble.com.
There we are. Well done, all. Okay, in the second half, we're going to be talking about Chelsea, Manchester United, Wolves and Watford. See you in a moment.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ball's coming in the box now. What a save. Saproni.
Spironi.
Well, I love the Arctic Monkeys in the background there.
That's a nice touch.
I don't know why that's in there, but
they're probably recording it at work.
Welcome back to the previous show, sponsored by Bet365. Chelsea versus Manchester United. We've had our international break, and it was a break for a number of reasons. One of them being we didn't have to talk about Jose Mourinho. All eyes back on him.
I suppose we never have to talk about him, but
he sort of forces his way in there, though, doesn't he?
Makes all eyes on us.
It's started again already, isn't it?
All eyes on us.
So, Pete, Marcus, is there been talk?
Everybody at the bridge. All eyes on us.
Keep going. Is there, at time of recording, do we know if Mourinho's going to be banned from the dugout for this game?
We don't. Okay. So there's an interesting situation. He's been charged by the FA for comments he made straight after the final whistle against Newcastle.
Fuck off, you sons of bitches.
In Portuguese.
That lip reader was a grass.
Who's been lip reading again?
If I was a lip reader, I'd say, no, he's doing items for his big shop. Just listen to him. Stitch him up.
He could avoid a touchline ban for this match. He has until 6 p.m. on Friday to respond to the charge. We're recording on Thursday, of course.
I do hope he doesn't fuck off.
If Mourinho responds, if Mourinho responds to the charge close to the deadline, which of course he has to respond to the charge before the deadline. Well, I mean, he may not, but of course that is the rule.
I have nothing to declare but my brilliance.
Any sanction would not be imposed due to the normal procedure time of an independent commission hearing. Right. But if he responds with enough time for the hearing, then he would probably miss the trip.
I have nothing to declare. But a midfielder at centre-half. Speaking of...
So I'm at 5-6 on Friday.
Speaking of disciplinary proceedings, I'm pleased you guys are all sat down for this surprising news.
Oh, yes.
Is anyone else just completely shocked that Joe Rawls' appeal against his red card was dismissed against Spurs?
Yeah, when he chopped him... Who did he chop down? Was it...
Was it Moura? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was Lucas Moura.
There we go.
How did that get to... I mean...
Got the ball, mate.
There used to be a situation where if it was a frivolous appeal, you get an extra extra game. Yeah. I remember Rio Ferdinand getting that.
That should happen.
Constantly getting that in Football Manager. Yeah. Constantly appeal.
Appeal everything.
Appeal everything. Yeah. Then storm out of a press conference.
But looking into this game, One thing that's really sort of note, I think, is that if you check out the game at Stamford Bridge between these two teams last season, and on the Chelsea side of the ledger, so much has changed.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, the manager's changed. But the person, a good few players won't that were playing for Chelsea last time will not play this time. And there's new players in there that will play, people like Jorginho and one or two others.
Barkley, perhaps.
Exactly. If you look on the United side, it just feels like it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like a bit of a mishmash of a team. You don't know what team he's going to play.
We don't change your winning formula, do
you? You don't, but that's not relevant in this case.
We were talking about the Chelseafication of Man United around this time last season, with Matic going in there and obviously Lukaku having links to Chelsea and you know, one or two others. And it feels like it's almost a bit of a Frankenstein's monster now, isn't it? It's just bits and pieces of lots of different ideas that haven't quite achieved
fruition.
Sentience that wins football matches. I sort of ran out of steam with that. But you know what I mean.
But Jim, do you not think this would actually be quite Jose Mourinho for Man United to go there and actually get some sort of result and do okay and just sort of prolong what's kind of going on? And people start going, is he turning it around? He probably isn't. But
it was a big result against Newcastle after a terrible first half.
It was the nature of it as well, wasn't it? Especially with Sanchez getting the winner, a player that's had a lot of criticism.
I don't, Marcus, agree with that. I think we've gone beyond that now. I think we're now in the situation, as I said a week or two ago, it's just my opinion, but that if they get on the end of a bad result, just the whole thing starts up again.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any chance at all. If Man United are going to win this game at Stamford Bridge, everyone's going to go, oh, now we're on our way.
I'm saying prolonging it rather than a complete turnaround.
But I just don't see any. Fair enough. Maybe I misunderstood the point. But my assessment of it is just that no matter what team he plays at Stamford Bridge on Saturday lunchtime, I can't imagine a lineup he puts out where they go, oh, that's what he's trying to do. Oh, and then it works. No, he's going to do that every week because he changed his team every single week.
Yeah. Which he used to do so brilliantly. It's easy to forget, isn't he? He was the absolute master of a tactical change, of game management, of just really, really making his substitutes like win a game. And that seems to have deserted him. And perhaps it's because he's fallen out with the players so much. Now, this is a really interesting thing. Man United haven't won at Stamford Bridge in any competition since Alex Ferguson retired, which is an amazing, amazing thing. And he'd love to go there and get that. But I just see the soap opera continuing because there is an X Factor. Are you aware of the X Factor?
Yes. Yeah. Is it good? Any good?
It's no.
New thing, is it?
It's it's a man called Mike Dean.
Ah, there you go. Dino's in charge of it.
He is in charge.
Of course he's in charge.
So, I mean, I think the most Mike Dean thing that could happen here would be Mourinho avoiding a ban then getting sent to the stands against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
I think that's it. I like that you often inform us where Dean is refereeing.
I don't seek it out, but if I notice it, it just pops out.
First game of the season, I was at Fulham against Palace. Imagine my delight when Deeney walked up the tunnel. Absolutely loving it. I instantly took a photo and put it on Instagram.
Yeah. Big Dino, Eden Hazard was interviewed recently, and he was talking about a possible move to Real Madrid and so on. And he mentioned,
did he know he was being interviewed based on what he said?
This is remarkable. I was doing when this happened. I was doing a show where you talk about the news headlines. And
show.
No.
Have I got news for
fuck
you?
Fuck that. this is much better. You do whatever you want. They showed the interview.
Yeah.
One part of which was broadcast out, I think, and the other part which wasn't broadcast out but was on camera, and then they broadcast it out because of the stuff he said.
Yeah. Right.
And one thing that hasn't been mentioned enough, in my opinion, is the look on his face when he's saying it. He is so obviously knows exactly what he's doing, so obviously being mischievous by saying it.
Yeah.
And there's no defense to it, because the immediate response to him saying all this stuff about Real Madrid is, why are you saying it then?
Yeah.
No one's making you say it. Footballers flat back questions away all the time.
Of course.
Yet he chooses that to say, oh, well, you never know. I love Real Madrid, blah, blah, blah. I want to win the Ballon d'Or.
The most he should say is, well, look, you know, any boy growing up would want to play for Real Madrid. They're absolutely a huge club. But, you know, Chelsea are a huge club as well, and I'm happy here and all that. That's the most you should say, because you're effectively saying, oh, you know, Real Madrid. And people say, oh, but I want footballers to be a bit more honest and so on and so forth. In one sense, yes, but in another sense, like a lot of Chelsea
he's
fans.
He's honest a lot, though, isn't he? He's done this a few times.
The only reason he could be saying it is just because he wants to get a better contract. And we saw yesterday Bruce Buck at Chelsea was talking about preparing a massive new pay rise for Hazard, and he's due a contract and all the rest of it. So it could serve a purpose on that front. But this stuff keeps coming up over there. He's not going to endear himself to Chelsea.
I would never have thought that. Bruce Buck would be the name of a finance guy in football.
The buck stops there.
I mean, the Ballon d'Or thing as well, it sounds quite cynical, but it's also quite clever, isn't it? Because it's putting forward this kind of essentially ridiculous intangible that Chelsea can't really... What
deliver
can you do with
the
that?
Ballon d'Or. Like,
I mean, but they probably can, but...
Well, of course.
I mean, the fact he said it, it's this unknowably strange
but
thing
Jimmy
that he's
can't
brought
get,
into it.
He probably feels like he can't get it or he has no chance of getting it this season because they're not in the Champions League.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, I don't think, you know, a Europa League player is not going to win the
Champions League. But of course, but sort of like, you know, long-term, Chelsea expect to be back up there and they probably will be.
They do,
so
but
he's
if you
looking
mean,
ahead to the future without Chelsea.
But if you look at the recent list of winners, it's all, you know, obviously Ronaldo and Messi have dominated, but a lot of Real Madrid, Barcelona players, you've got teams who are the best size in Europe. I mean, there might be one or two anomalies. Forgive me if I've missed something there, but that is it. And he clearly wants to go to Real Madrid. Now, I actually tweeted out this about how I felt it was from the Ramble account. I just felt not a huge shame for crying out. It's football, and it's a footballer talking about the prospects of his career. So I'm not really put out by it for crying out loud.
No, you are. You were fuming.
I was fuming. and I phoned you in tears.
You're fuming now.
He's at me there.
but I just. There's something about a footballer saying, you know, I want to go over there. It's a bit like what happened with Neymar when he went to PSG, and obviously that's not working
out. He wants to come back.
Yeah. Now, of course it's his career. Of course he should aspire to win as much as he can, and obviously if your performances are brilliant, you get the individual ones. But I was interested in some of the replies we got, and I feel that you try and win trophies for the team, and then the individuals are sort of a byproduct, you know. And I know, Luke, you've spoken quite well on this. What did you make of his comments about?
I've spoken well on it, guys.
Yeah, I just back me up, bruv.
I've told you sort of what I think about his behaviour. But in terms of the individual award stuff, you guys know, and people who listen to the show will know, even if they don't care, they'll know that I don't see individual awards as. I just don't see top players at the end of their careers. In 20 years after they've retired or whatever, saying, oh, I won this amount of Ballon d'Or.
I think there might be
a massive sea change on that one.
Yeah, there is. Well, that's what I was going to go on to say. Traditionally, that would never happen. Mm. Now, because of Messi and Ronaldo and because of the rise of individualism, not just in football, but generally more broadly speaking as well, I think you're right. There could be a sea change and we could see it happening more and more.
For me, though, the most annoying thing is that for a certain echelon of football and a certain level of footballer, their interest in the league is so in the background compared to the Champions League. Just it's the only competition they want to be in, and it's such a
top players, yeah.
Those sort of Eden Hazard players, they just want to play in the Champions League. They're almost not asked about the Premier League.
Liverpool players.
He would have pushed through a move in the summer though if that was probably true. I understand what you mean.
Well, no, he tried to push. The thing about that is, I think you're both right, but you have to understand that Hazard would have gone to Real Madrid in the summer, but Real Madrid didn't try and sign him.
Okay, yeah.
The only reason he didn't go is because Real Madrid didn't make a bid for him.
They want those Tuesday and Wednesday night lights, kind of. They want the Champions League music. They don't want to be playing at Stoke. They don't want to be playing at...
Well, they won't.
Those two teams
have been relegated admittedly.
Going back to Chelsea as a team, though,
yes,
they haven't lost at all in any competition since the Community Shield.
Impressive.
And they've been... I don't think anyone here thought that they would be able to challenge Liverpool or Man City. I mean, I personally thought Man City would be head and shoulders, and you know, maybe they still will be. Do you think that we'll find out a lot in this game against Man United, how long they can sustain this for?
I think this is it's an interesting test for them because they're the better side, but they are against a trickier opponent. And I think Chelsea will sustain. I think that we've talked about Manchester City and Liverpool being perhaps the main title challengers, or not challengers, Man City, the champions, but you know what I mean? I really hope we see three teams going for it, and I think Chelsea could be up there the way they're playing. The only thing that I would be mildly concerned about is the strikers are not scoring too much, but then, as Giroud has proved a few times before, and most notably in the World Cup, he doesn't even need to get a shot on target to win the big trophies, does he?
Giroud is actually the leading assist maker in the league.
Yeah, well, there you go. So he proves his worth.
And Hazard is stepping up with goals. But, you know, I said before, didn't I, about Sarri, about how he's so dogmatic to his system.
Yeah.
And
I see what you mean. Like,
yeah, and I heard, at Napoli he was, anyway.
No, but you're saying so his reluctance to adapt that system could bite
could
him on
do,
the
because arm. He might be faced with different challenges and he might find out that they come up against Man City, who are better than them, and they might have to change it to compete, or they'll get beaten, and that could be the difference, couldn't it? Because if those teams are both going for it. I heard Danny Murphy say, though, that he thought that if a team was good enough and they knew the system well enough, players don't like it being changed that often anyway, which I can sort of see that side of the point.
Depends if you're on the bench or not, though.
True, exactly. If you're on the bench, you definitely want it changed.
You certainly do, yeah.
Chelsea are 9-1 third favourites, having said all that, to win the Premier League this season with Bet365. £10 will return £100, including stakes, should they do it in Maurizio Sarri's first season in charge.
Cool, how about that, eh? Before we move on, I know he's an ex-Man United player now, but that Wayne Rooney free kick for DC United,
enjoying that,
check that out.
Well, it doesn't matter what level of... Well, it kind of does keeper-wise, but...
I mean, it was a long...
I don't care who he's playing for. That's a cracking goal.
It was an absolute
because apparently the balls are lighter in the MLS.
Lighter in the MLS.
Oh, and if things couldn't get worse for Man United, by the way, then that photo of Kanye West wearing a Man United tracksuit.
Yeah, that's a bizarre one, isn't it?
What do we think about
that? I
mean,
everything he does is bizarre.
Surprising, isn't it?
Make United great again. Oh... No, I don't feel sorry for you, Man United fans. You had a lot of good times recently.
Certainly did.
So there we are. Let's move on to Wolves versus Watford. Wolves haven't lost in the league since August.
No.
You look at their record, chaps. I mean, it's pretty impressive. They're not big scorers, Jim, but Big Nuno has got them well drilled at the back. And he won Manager of the Month for September, which he said at the start of that month was his main aim.
Did you really? this is a really good example. Three teams here, really good example of how the Premier League, and we always use this word narrative, and I know some people hate it, but it really does best describe it, of how coverage of the Premier League works, right? So the start of the season, it's all about Watford, right? Mm-hmm. Well, can Watford do it? And before you know it, the Twitter JPEGs are coming out, the memes, this is what Leicester were doing this time when they won it. Mm. And then Watford just fall off a cliff and now they're ninth and they've lost, I don't think they've won in their last four.
Which is
a real common problem at Watford, isn't it? They seem to, in my head at least, they seem to do this a lot, go on a really good run and then just sort of fall apart for a bit.
And then they get beaten badly by, guess who?
Bournemouth,
right? Bournemouth beat them 4-0 at their place. And then Bournemouth are flavour of the month. Eddie Howe what job's he going to do next? Eddie Howe, Bournemouth are up in sixth.
Yeah, but they're only 4 points off the top.
And now we're talking about Wolves because they're playing Watford, and Wolves, of course, went to Crystal Palace and beat them.
And they're only 5 points off the
top. So it's funny how different teams become like flavours. I'm just as bad as anyone else about it. Different teams become flavours of the month, and we'll wait to see who comes next.
Indeed, we will.
Different managers become managers of the month.
Yeah,
it's quite pleasing though. Wolves versus Watford playing each other. I think that you'd have to have Wolves as favourites for this one, the way they're playing. And the Wolves player that I've quite enjoyed this season is the striker, Raul Jimenez. He's not scored too many goals. He might have, one or two this season? Maybe just the one. But I really, talking of Giroud, his hold-up play is superb. And with that Wolves midfield, you know they've got goals in them and whatnot. I think, was it Jimenez who lay off to Moutinho, Old Trafford off the top of my head? They are spreading the goals around. But his link-up play, with the Wolves, the way they like to play, they've got a few, as we know, Portuguese player in there, like to play the ball to feet, blah-de-blah. When you have a striker who can bring in those players, you know, he's pretty good with his back-to-goal, Jimenez. For that style of football they're playing, it can add a lot. And if they can add goals, because I say Wolves are not scoring that many, but they are not conceding many at all, then it could be an incredible season for them. I know they've spent big, and fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it, the way football is these days. But they really could cement themselves in the top.
Oh, I think they will. I think if you look, I was at Molineux earlier in the week, and you look at the criticism people like Costa and Neves got for moving to Wolves from Porto and Benfica in a World Cup year. But now they're both in the Portugal squad. I mean, they're both young enough to sort of reap the benefit of that for a while to come. Costa's 24 and Neves, I think, is 21. So the owners at Wolves are wealthy. They've got a lot of money because that's what wealthy means. I don't know why I said that. But they've got this 7-year plan where they want to sort of push Wolves into the top 10, then into the top four, and then they want to go on and try and win the Premier League, of course, which is very ambitious. But when you go there, you can't really help but be impressed by the setup there. And I just don't think there's any chance at all they'll be relegated. I just can't see them going anywhere near it. And I think they have a good chance of getting in the top 10 as well. I was impressed when I was down there. I thought it was a good setup.
I mean, Wolves' aim, you know, as long as I've been watching football, is to consolidate themselves as a Premier League team, isn't it? And I've never seen them look anywhere near as close to this.
They don't look like a promoted team, do they?
No, they really don't.
But for years, do you remember Wolves were always that team that were kind of hanging around the top end of, well, it was Division One and then the Championship.
Yeah, they came up in 2003 with Portsmouth. Yeah.
They did. Yeah. And it was...
Doritos sponsorship.
Yeah.
Alex
yeah.
Ray pulling the strings in the midfield.
Paul Ince.
Glenn Hoddle manager?
He was around at one point, yeah. They had Paul Ince and Alex Rowe in the midfield, you're right, yeah.
That was when Ince, yeah, that was when he got sent off and he was like, well, the referee can now tell his grandkids he's sent off Paul Ince. Yeah, but with Wolves...
He won't sit in a Wolves shirt, though.
No. He had his top off. His top. Yeah. But anyway, yes, they're here and they look as though they're here to stay.
And the Wolves win here is 8-11 with Bet365, so £10 return, £17.27, including stakes. Should Wolves do the business? And you would be a fool to doubt them. I think they've got a good chance of winning at the weekend.
It's just business. Speaking of which, what is our best bet? Bet365, Luke.
We've got someone else in the seats now. Yeah. Jack Drury, who says, morning Ramblers, in light of some debatable choices from previous best betters, I think it's time I came in and sorted it all out. Jack, you are not the first person to say or think that. To do so, I'm going to look at the juiciest affair kicking off at 12:30 on Saturday with Jose Mourinho returning to Stamford Bridge to face his former side, high-flying Chelsea. Unfortunately for Jose, the international break came as soon as they finally regained some form in the final 20 minutes against Newcastle last week. Sorry to bring it up again, Pete. No. And Chelsea look unstoppable with a certain Eden Hazard running rampant. That is why my best bet is Chelsea to be victorious and the little Belgian maestro to score his 8th of the season, which comes in at 7-4 on Bet365's Bet Builder. Keep up the good work, guys, and I look forward to raising some big money for charity. Chelsea to beat Man United and Eden Hazard to score is indeed 7-4 with Bet365 and is our best bet. Thanks for that, Jack. £50 returns £137.50, including stake, with all proceeds going to Prostate Cancer UK. You must be over the age of 18 to gamble, and do gamble responsibly. And for more information on that, it's begambleaware.org.
Go on, Jacko.
Yeah.
Jack Drury. We're pulling for you, mate.
Certainly are. Now, ladies and gentlemen, time for Going for Gold.
Time for Going for Gold. So the heat is on
and the time is right.
It's time for you, well, you to play the game. People are coming, everyone's trying to be the best that they can. To reach for the sky where the stakes are so high. We're all going for gold.
There we go. Yeah. I'm a bit worried about my form. I haven't won one for ages. I don't think I've won one since Edin Dzeko, third or fourth game of the season, week of the season.
On the WhatsApp group, I mentioned that I once interviewed the architect of that track.
Yes, you did.
Hans Zimmer. And I didn't click record on the recorder. And so we sat there for a good 20 minutes talking.
You knew.
And I knew halfway through that I hadn't clicked record. So
you had to style it out.
It was just had to style it out and pretend that it was going to go out on the radio. And it never did.
Oh.
So there we go.
Hans Zimmer sent a few sternly worded letters. I've been waiting for this interview to air for weeks.
The heat really was on for me. The time was not right. Tom Adams, thank you, Tom Adams. I sort of run roughshod over a lot of people getting in touch and giving me clues. I do really appreciate it because at the end of the day, I am almost pathologically lazy. So thank you very much to everyone who get involved with the clues.
To put that into starker focus, thank the listeners so much, because purely if they didn't, this feature could not exist.
No. Yeah. The heat would be off.
Yeah.
Born.
That sounded like the birth.
I've never done that with my mouth.
What, you're reenacting the birth.
I just went Born. Born on the 1st of November 1963.
Okay.
I made 72 appearances for my national side, scoring 16 goals.
Stop. Finidi George.
Nice.
I love that.
Yeah,
that.
And it could be 57 or 55.
Yeah. I've played for Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Everton, Blackburn, and a couple of others.
Whoa, that's a weird one.
Can you say them again, please?
Barcelona, Chelsea, Blackburn?
Yeah, Barcelona, Chelsea, Blackburn, Bayern.
Huh.
And Everton.
Blimey.
Stop. Ed De Hoy.
I love his face. I love his little moustache, but no.
Yeah, I don't think he played for Bayern Munich, did he? I don't think.
I'm not sure if he played for any of those sides.
He played for Chelsea.
Oh, you mentioned Chelsea. Right, yeah. Sorry, Jim.
I love that. Jim's by far the best at this.
I don't know why I'm criticising. Yeah.
Go on.
I once played 2 competitive games in the same day.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Good for him.
They were for Bayern Munich and Wales.
Oh! Stop! It's got to be Mark Hughes, isn't it?
It is Mark Hughes!
Well done, Morsey.
Congratulations.
Thank God for that. Good. The pressure's
I
off now.
I omitted Manchester United for obvious
that
reasons.
That was naughty.
He played for Bayern. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
My real first name is Leslie.
I did know that.
Is it really? Leslie Hughes.
Yeah, Leslie Mark Hughes, his name is. Yeah.
You're back in there.
Yeah, I'm pleased. It's a monkey off my back. Nice one. It really
lovely.
Is. Fantastic. Thanks
lovely
very much.
Lovely old
that.
Job.
Thank
there
you
we
very
are.
Much. Some fine clues from Tom Adams there. If you want to get into the shot and chuck me some clues and help a guy out, pete@thefootballramble.com. Don't send it to the main account. That's foolish. That's foolish talk.
We've had some really good ones go to the main account. We can never use them.
We can never use them.
No. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Preview Show, sponsored by Bet365. We're back on Monday, of course, with the Football Ramble. Say goodbye, Luke Moore.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete Donaldson.
See ya.
Say goodbye, Jim Campbell.
Bye.
Bye from me, listeners.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.